Morning. I'll wait till you're.
Let me find my. There it is. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Hello.
All right. All right. Good morning. We are ready to rock and roll. We will call the St. Paul City Council organizational committee to order. This is more of an informal meeting. We have our newest, soon-to-be sworn-in council member at the table with us today because, of course, the budget is a big part of our role here, and this is our today's singular agenda item is the 2022 overview of the budget and the 2023 budget council phase process by Ms. Houston. So we will go through kind of a preview of what's to come in our budget season, maybe a check-in on where things have landed so far with our 2022 budget, and I think we have a little bit of ARP in this presentation as well. So it'll just give us a kind of a set point from which we will launch into our 2023 budget council phase. We did get a press release this week that the mayor will be giving his budget address on the 18th of August, which is next Thursday. And then on Wednesday, following the budget presentation by the mayor's office, we get a budget presentation at the council meeting. I'll look to Ms. Houston. That's when we have Ramsey County in as well. Are there?
Council President Brenmoan, they're scheduled to come later.
Okay.
In September. So okay. I'm hoping to get some of their information ahead of time, though. But okay. I will get a little into tax trends today just from what was presented through the assessor's report, which is preliminary data that was seen in April.
Okay, great. So we'll hear from Ramsey County in September and then proceed on with our budget schedule, which Holly will be outlining today. So I will turn things over to Ms. Houston for the City Council budget prep. Welcome.
Thank you, Council Member Brenmoan. Council members, good morning. I'm Holly Houston, your Chief Budget Officer. As Council President mentioned, I'll just be giving an overview today. We'll just kind of level set and go through what happened last year as part of the 2022 budget adoption, as well as what things we've talked about through organizational committee meetings this year, as well as different topics that have come up mid-year that are just things to note that will help prepare you going into the 2023 budget season. I'll touch base on the property tax trends that we are seeing, and then just discuss the plan for 2023 budget ahead. So with that, just to recap, in 2021, just to remind everyone that we did a 0% levy increase. And so because of the pandemic and all the hardship that everyone was seeing, the budget was very bare bones. We, you know, did the best to keep the levy low and maintain high level of services that our residents needed. And so last year there was a 6.9% budget proposal, and the City Council was able to reduce that by almost $1 million, getting it to $6.2 million. Last year's budget,
just a moment to give low.
Last year's budget also included restoring critical positions that were lost in 2021 to maintain that low levy limit. We also had established ongoing support for the Law Enforcement Career Academy last year. It used to be funded privately, and this year, in 2022, this year, it became part of the ongoing general fund investments. There is a new five-year capital improvement plan, and with the low interest rates, we are able to launch three needed investments in the Hamline Midway Library, the North End Community Center, and Fire Station 7. There is $8.3 million of ARP funds used for budget stabilization that we anticipate the step-off, and so I think that's just something to note that as we go through this budget season, what is that plan for stepping off of ARP for some of the ongoing critical positions that were invested in the library and parks program? Last year, there's also some investment with ARP for mill and overlay. So what's the plan going forward? The Office of Neighborhood and safety was created. We implemented, the council implemented a semi-annual police academy. So often during the budget cycle, we heard from police that staffing levels would get really low in the summer, and that's one of their busiest times. And the issue is when we have an academy, we only had it once a year. And so if people through attrition or other opportunities left the police department, staffing levels would be low and the opportunity to hire more would be, there'd be a gap. So the idea was to have two police academies to maintain those staffing levels throughout the year. So it'll be interesting to talk to the police academy. I think the second one is about to start. And so it's still in a pilot and implementation phase, but it'll be good to get a pulse on how that's going and if that's helped stabilize staffing levels. Council also expanded the pedestrian and bike safety investments.
Houston, just cutting in quickly, too, and I think this is I think we're in alignment on this, but one of the things that we were trying to avoid is having our budget season start with the police department saying, we're super short-staffed, and we agree at that time the way that the hiring process worked, that they were at their lowest point, like right as we walked into the budget. And so, I mean, part of the leveling out was like we wanted to have a kind of a level playing field with all of our departments in terms of what are your staffing levels look like, what is where are we at with attrition, and not have it kind of be falsely impacted by the schedule of one police academy a year. So, I mean, it is my hope. The second academy has been noticed?
Yes.
And they'll be starting it before we...
In the fall, I believe, but okay. Yes.
Yeah. I think that is in some ways just to help moderate the conversation a little bit in terms of... you know, where our gaps are, because it does seem like having more of a steady stream of new hires as opposed to a big... I know that some of us were at the graduation for the last police academy, and there was 55 new officers, and even the trainer said it was great, but it was really hard to get 55 students through an academy because it took longer, they didn't feel like they had as much one-on-one time with the cadets, and so I think this is ultimately going to be better for our community, for the cadets, for the department, and for our budget process.
Absolutely. Thank you. In addition, council added pedestrian and bike safety investments, almost doubling the investment in that budget this year. There's also additional, there's a creation of specific citywide equity training budget dollars. And then there's an increase in graffiti and plywood abatements, and then a creation of neighborhood level development fund. Budget topics that the council's discussed this year, we had a presentation on parking enforcement. And what came out of that was truck parking ordinance should mirror Minneapolis, review the Community First Public Safety Commission recommendations on location of parking enforcement office, and then review the number of PEOs. So that is parking enforcement officers. That's what that stands for. Currently, I believe there's 12, and that's the lowest in history. I think it's normally around 15. We've also discussed the 5-year street plan and how we can increase street maintenance and potentially implement a mill and overlay program for residential. The St. Paul Streets program, we're trying to get that completed. So the intention, I'm going to forget my dates now, but I believe in the 90s, that program was started with the intention to redo all residential streets, and we're about halfway through. And so as the years have gone by, the cost of doing the streets has increased, and we haven't been able to get as much done as we wanted. So there's a strong emphasis to complete that program and make sure that we're maintaining our residential streets to get the most life. And so we can expect, I believe, to hear more about that as part of the budget plan and what their thinking is there. Evaluate staffing levels. Okay, so these are just things that some of them might overlap from what I previously just talked about, but they're just things that we want to maybe keep notice of as we go into the budget process. So as I mentioned, the police academies. We discussed wire theft and lighting and heard about some innovative ways that the police department and it's a multi-parks department and public works is working together to remedy that. There's no easy solution. We've Project Home. There was investments in unsheltered space. I'm going to get the wrong name. And then let's see. So we established equity training budget. We also just wanted to touch base on the chief equity officer position within HR and how that's the overlap there. Something to follow up on this year. The Neighborhood Development Fund was created with the City Council. That's part of the sales tax dollars. And I think through the process of trying to implement that program, we've established there's some opportunities to just further develop that program. And as we've come back to a few times, just look at STAR and sales tax use overall citywide. Festival and parade funding opportunity. There's often, we've been hearing from people that they can't afford to have festivals and parades like they used to. The police costs have gone up based on the new model and cost. They streamlined the pricing and brought it in-house. So there's been some issues there, not issues, but there's been some concerns there about funding those festivals and parades. And so I think the council has taken an interest and wants to make sure that those things happen to create a strong community and safe community. But is there anything, is a role that the city council could play through the budget process and making funding more available?
And I will pause and maybe look to Ms. House and say we were basically asked to stand down because the deputy mayor was going to convene some committee on this, and so perhaps we could get an update. There's no need for us to reinvent the wheel if the mayor's office took the lead on this, but we don't have answers and we know there continues to be concerns, so it'd be good to get an update on that process, even if it changed since initially was brought up.
Yeah, sure. Excuse me, Council President and Council members. So I talked to the Deputy Mayor about this actually, I think, last week when she and I connected, maybe 2 weeks ago. And her latest, so the mayor has been trying to work with the new interim police chief to find ways that the police department can bring down costs without having to, you know, form this big group to tell them to bring down costs. Can the department do this on their own without us having to make them do it? So they're having those conversations with the new interim chief, Ellison. And on the mayor's side of the equation, they are working with a staff person in their office whose name is escaping me right now, who has experience in community organizing, who to be kind of the point person that community groups who want to have festivals and events in the city can go to for help navigating the process of getting these permits. So that's where they are right now in the process. They're kind of hoping to, at this point, avoid forming a big task force if they can find ways to bring down costs and make the process easier for festival holders, just with the tools they have right now.
Great. Well, yes. An update would be wonderful to get from the deputy mayor on that topic, and I fully agree, not every question deserves a task force.
Yeah.
Ms. Nanker.
Thanks, Council President. Ms. House, do you know if the name of the person in the mayor's office has been communicated to the festival organizers?
I don't know.
Because the questions I'm getting are that people haven't really heard much and are expecting change, so
right.
It would be good for that to be included in an update, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is like, I think at this, so I don't want to say for sure. I think at this point they are internal staff conversations and they haven't been officially changed yet. It would be changing this person's job duties, so I think they're in the process of making that happen. But again, I'm not 100% on that.
Okay. Well, part of our update would be where do we send people?
Yep.
If I could just add to that, you know, the planning for 2023 festivals is happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So we really shouldn't, I mean, we can't wait until the end of the year or next year, especially if there are budget implications. But in terms of the community wanting to put these things together, they are starting a year ahead.
And I think on the council side of the equation, we had talked about, you know, do we want to establish a fund that to help support some of the smaller, unsponsored events and activities? And I think that there's kind of a nexus between finding some funds and resources and how we're managing security And then also just what events are we having and do they continue to make sense or is there a way that we can evolve some of these events so that they're easier to manage and then also less expensive? I think it's kind of all three parts of the conversation. And so to Ms. Houston's point, we put these things on the agenda to remind us as we're going into the budget, we can't talk about it and not do something about it. So this is our reminder on that budget piece of it.
And I do think, you know, setting aside some amount of cultural star for it would make some sense.
Yeah, definitely. So that will bring that, you will bring that forward in the budget. Okay. Great. Ms. Houston.
Thank you. Moving on, this year is the capital improvement budget community project year, so that will be exciting to learn about and hear about. The council continues to support centralized fleet management. There are some complications with merging public safety within the current centralized fleet, but that's something we keep asking about and want to understand and just take note. So, and then we have heard also from the Housing Trust Fund and Inspiring Communities just recently, which will set us up nicely going into the budget process. Mid-year budget topics, inflation, interest rates, utilities, and fuel costs have significantly increased. For this year in 2022, our fuel costs were locked in the beginning of the year, so there's not an issue there. But I'm curious and would like to learn more if there's implication for the 2023 budget. Salary negotiations. So the 2021-2022 salary negotiations are coming to a close. I believe police isn't settled yet, but all the other unions are. So that has been going on throughout this year. And then we launch right into salary negotiations for 2023. So once we hear from the mayor's budget, I can talk to you about the assumptions that were built into that proposed budget. Hiring new staff, salary turnover, and attrition have been an issue for the city of St. Paul, just like every other place right now. It's definitely an employee's market. We're hiring new staff as soon as we can, but there has been some challenge in that. Rent stabilization ordinance was introduced and was voted and improved last year. And through that process, mid-year, the council received two additional FTEs to support that work going forward, as well as an attorney. Someone in DSI also received a FTE. So that was a mid-year change in 2022. And so that will be a topic in 2023 to understand if the staffing levels are appropriate, what does the process look like. And after speaking with DSI and knowing that this is something that was introduced in the agenda last week and knowing there's amendments coming, we might not know the full scope when we talk to DSI of the workload. But it'll be an ongoing conversation throughout we have from August to December to talk about it. But we're hearing from DSI the 24th, and so she's like, we're not going to have a clear plan by the 24th with all the amendments and changes, with not having a finalized ordinance yet.
Right, and we locked in two staff. One is an assistant, and one is a
policy analyst.
A policy analyst, and that was in anticipation of appeals coming through the council process. And I think we just didn't know what the number of appeals we would be hearing, the complexity of the appeals that we'd be hearing. So we're sort of steady as she goes right now with these two positions and making sure that we end up using them appropriately for the demands that are coming into our office, or redeploy them if we're finding that Ms. Mormon is spending more time on that and we need to fill a hole maybe in with the work that she's traditionally done. But I think that that's somewhat yet to be seen. At some point, if we need to shift one of those positions to DSI or to the city attorney's office, or we would be open to that. But I think still anticipating that appeals will be a time-consuming piece of the work. So we've had a few. And I know that the first ones were a ton of work, but of course that's because they're pioneering. But we will see as the rest of the months taper on what are the needs of the council on this. But we, those two positions were for us basically an earmark. We wanted to make sure with the rent stabilization that we were able to handle capacity. Ms. Prince.
And to that point, I believe we're adding a tenant appeal process as well, which hadn't been contemplated when the original staffing was done. So we need more information on how that's going to be handled.
And that part of it was recognizing that we had added, and this is one of Ms. Prince's pet issues, is just we added water complaints, appeals to the workload, and we have been sort of adding. So it was like recognizing that the workload continues to add on for Ms. Mormon, and the capacity doesn't necessarily expand. So, all right, thank you.
Yes. Street maintenance budget, so that scope has changed since it was adopted, and so that'll be a topic for 2023. And then this isn't necessarily a mid-year budget topic, but just a reminder, it didn't fit into anyone's slide real well, but that because of we have a debt strategy, a long-term debt strategy, and part of that strategy does obligate future levy. So part of that is that $1.65 million is needed above and beyond what was in the budget last year for the debt that we currently have. So that's just a reminder.
And just bopping back to street maintenance quickly, a reminder that this week our Right Track interns went out with the pothole crew. And so no one can ever say the city council did nothing to do help with street maintenance. We did. Our team of four was all out filling potholes all Monday morning. Posted it on social media, but just wanted to remind you that we are actually putting up our sleeves and filling in potholes with the Public Works crew. Thanks for organizing that. Did I see some of our interns in here? No. I'll shout out to them later.
This year, the City Council also worked with the mayor's office and agreed to allocating the American Rescue Plan, the $166.6 million. This is just an overview of some of the highlights. So within neighborhood safety, $37.57 million. There will be dedicated traffic and ped safety, library parks and rec investments, public safety, community proposals and grants. Just to mention a few, we have the details, but and if you have any specific questions, let me know. Also, there's $38.5 million for affordable housing, $43.8 million for workforce investments, including tourism support for the River Center and lead pipes. Vaccines and public health is receiving a small allocation, and then $15.6 million for modernization of city services. Some of those projects are highlighted below there. And then $9 million for administration of the grant. And so far this year, we have received, in June, we had a resolution come through, and we also had one in July for allocating a portion of those fundings. This fall, we should see the final one, and then that funding will be budgeted and allocated. Property tax trends.
Thanks, Council President. Sorry, Ms. Houston, I'm slow on the draw today. So just going down to the footnote or the asterisk,
yep.
The $48 million remains to be budgeted. I thought we'd taken the whole 166 and
through resolution, the 48.
Got it. Yes. So everything has been allocated to a bucket. We have past resolutions on all the ones. Okay.
Right. So, thank you for clarifying that. I think we're all familiar with what some of the housing, at least residential housing market, has done in the past year, and the assessor's report is evident of that. So residential homes market value was up 13.27%. For the average homeowner, their average house price is $261,900. That's up 15.37% from last year. So last year's average residential home in St. Paul was $227,000, and now it's $261,000, almost $262,000. Commercial was relatively flat. If we're talking about the estimated market value versus median. So I'll stick to estimated market on the top here. And then industrial was just about 7% increase. Apartments saw 14.32, and overall 11.76% increase in St. Paul market value. And just the note there is that Highland Bridge parcels represent 46.7 million of the $33 billion market value. And then going down, you can see the median prices, the value of different types of property. So we talked about residential, home, commercial rates, industrial buildings, and then apartment values. And then there's just a chart there that shows the percentages compared to Ramsey County suburbs versus St. Paul. This is always an important look just because the taxes, the property taxes are a pie, and depending on where the value is, it shifts on, it can shift. So this is the first time in my tenure here that St. Paul has not grown as much as the suburbs, and so I am expecting some potential positive tax shifts for St. Paul. This just gives you a history to kind of talk about what I just mentioned. So what I just mentioned here is St. Paul's this green line, and we've always just been slightly higher than the suburbs, but this year the suburbs have slightly overtaken St. Paul. And then going back to the left, apartments and commercial, there's been some peaks and valleys. Residential's been somewhat flat, but this year it really saw a peak. And
Ms. Zinker.
Yeah.
Thanks, Council President. Ms. Houston, just to clarify, well, two questions. One, this should cause tax shifts to the suburban cities, meaning taxes would increase there relative to here, not revenue shifts to those cities.
Not correct. Not revenue shifts. If everybody's property, if everyone's levy stayed the same as they did this year and the same tax was applied, there would be a slight shift between the suburbs paying more versus St. Paul. And we'll find out more from Ramsey County in a month.
And then this question hadn't occurred to me before, but you learn something new every budget cycle. So on the previous slide about market value, is there a way to tell the difference between just having your set amount of housing and commercial that you had the year before and that increasing in value versus actually adding new housing or new commercial, developing previously undeveloped land and then seeing the value grow? Does that make sense?
Council President Brenmoen, Council Member Naker, yes, and I'll follow up with you. I think that it's a combination of like tax capacity, but they also do new versus established. So I can get that detail for you.
I think that's something that we've been trying to like put our thumb on for a long time because we try to catalyze growth right. And expansion, and then we never really account for it when it comes time to. For our budget.
Right. And I think it came to me this year looking at Highland Bridge, thinking about that's completely new tax base, right, as opposed to just our existing tax base grew in value because of the cost of home buying or whatever. So, I think it would be interesting to be able to break those two apart.
Well, we've approved a ton of apartment buildings, and we've done other expansion on commercial industrial as well, so it would be interesting.
It is tipped.
Some is. Not all. I mean, Highland, but...
Can I just one reminder?
Robert.
When they do tax values, it's for January 1 or 2 of the previous year. So it's going to be lagged with the Ramsey County assessors. So, like, the tax for this next year would be based on the valuation on January 1, 2022. And so the tax this year is for they lag that so the assessors can catch up and get the right values. I just want to flag that because sometimes there's been a lot of growth in the last couple of years that might not be accounted for.
All right, thank you. And what it looks like for our neighborhoods across St. Paul this year, I hate it. I feel like I'm saying the same story each year for the past few years, but the property or the neighborhoods seeing the most growth are Payne, Phelan, Greater East Side, and Dayton's Bluff. Those neighborhoods have not recovered as quickly from the last recession in 2009, and so they continue to recover where the other neighborhoods recovered a little bit faster, and so that's the difference there. Moving on to 2023 council budget phase. I've drafted some budget guiding principles. This is just a best practice that finance officers like to have. but it's really about putting down your guiding principles to help make you make those tough decisions. This is a combination of things I've heard in the past and things that were provided in our memo to the mayor's office. And so if there's anything missing here, it's just really a guide to if we have a tough decision. It's almost like a checklist. Do they check against these boxes, and are they meeting the objectives that we set forth? If there's anything missing here, let me know. But we strive to have a balanced budget, evidence-based budget decisions and practices, providing excellence in city and constituent services, focusing on hiring critical positions and ensuring competitive wages. Budgets should be closely aligned with city strategic priorities, examine city processes, and look for effective operational synergies to leverage resources. This gets back to the example of festival costs, which is a combination of things there. The city shall continuously seek new and diverse revenue to limit the dependence on property taxes. Maximum state and federal revenue opportunities, so continue to look for those grants and make sure that we're using those funds in a smart way to get the most for our buck. And then the city shall charge a fair and equitable fee for services where applicable and cover costs.
Just before you move on, looking back, you said you felt like a broken record when you pointed out that the percent growth was highest in certain neighborhoods, and then you qualified it. But I also do feel like sometimes percentages tell one story and numbers tell a different story. And the percentages on these always frustrates me because if you look at the numbers from 2020 to 2021 and 2021 to 2022, you know, what's looking like is finally the east side, the west side, the north end, Dayton's Bluff and Pinfield are catching up. But there's still some neighborhoods that are significantly higher. Their increases are actually significantly higher than those neighborhoods that have the higher percentages, but just the numbers are higher. So I feel like there's just times when percentages tell us different, maybe don't paint a full picture of the changes. And I know if you're not trying to sell your home in the North End, it doesn't matter as much that your home value is going up, but I know that building wealth, and a lot of our properties are owned by small landlords who are doing just that, and these are actually positive numbers. We've been far, far behind the city for many, many years. So I don't know. I feel like sometimes the percentages only tell part of the story.
Council President Brenmoen, thank you. That's a really good point. I think based on how the state does our property tax calculation, the thing that I look for is when homes are seeing a higher percentage increase than the median increase, they're going to have some of those tax shifts. So their property taxes may be going up. And so that's what I think about when I see these numbers, but you're absolutely right. When you look at the numbers, true and pure, it doesn't tell the whole picture.
Right. People will contact us and say, my taxes went up 25%. But it matters where the taxes started out as well in terms of what that increase is. It's always any increase, especially if you have a fixed income, is an increase. And I don't mean to minimize that. But it just we have to recognize that there's good news in this as well, that some of our more challenged areas are at long last catching up. Ms. Prince.
You know, to that point, I think we have talked a little bit as a council about the fact that limited market value is something that the state occasionally puts into effect so that people living in the homes aren't taxed for the full amount of the increase in their value, because if they're living there, they don't realize it. And what the state has substituted for that in recent years is the automatic, you know, the if your taxes went up more than 12%, then you can apply for the refund. But I think it might be something we want to look at as a legislative priority is revisiting limited market value.
And that just reminded me, too, that one of the notions of last year's budget that the council decided to not support was the property tax refund conversation that the mayor proposed. And I think we wanted to, instead of starting an additional pilot program here in St. Paul, to go get some of the money that was left on the table by our community members. We heard to the tune of $25 million. So perhaps we can add that to our please update us list and see how Ramsey County, if they were effective in that initiative. That's a lot of money that our residents are not claiming, and we need to, until it's an automatic, we need to be banging on the doors and making sure people are qualifying for that. And I think I'm thinking about the lead pipes program. Like, if we're out doing that work, is that another, do we already know that we're talking to people who probably qualify for tax refunds? So are we doubling up our efforts in any of those initiatives that we're putting out there? And I know Ramsey County was taking a lead on that, and OFE was working with them. So perhaps we could get an update on that as we walk into this budget season.
Councilmember Prince, Councilmember Brenmoan, I will add that to make sure that we do get an update on that, because I do know they were working on that.
Yeah. This is just going to be adding things to your list today.
I'm so psyched. It's budget time. Woo! All right. So City Council policy and budget priorities, these were established in the beginning of the year. And there are, they also are the items that we supported in our budget memo to with the mayor's office and shared that we want to see continued investments to support economic growth and development, expand and preserve affordable housing, improve neighborhood safety and eliminate gun violence, ensure equitable and responsible use of city resources, provide excellence in city and constituent services, and integrating climate action and resilience strategies.
I was thinking the other day that we have to work a little bit on our branding because we did not put that in our job posting. Mr. Ballinger should have known these things before he signed up. And we should have grilled him during the interview, but we didn't. So next time.
Nothing here makes him run away.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I can't be any part of this.
Surprise.
So that brings me to the calendar. This is a draft. Of course, the official budget or the official calendar will be on the city website. So far we're planning to hear from the mayor's proposed budget. So from the Office of Financial Services, they give us that nice overview of the changes that he proposes on August 24th. And then we'll hear from the Department of Safety and Inspections. Following that, we have fire and police coming, the library board, Ramsey County tax trends, parks and recreation, HRA. So we have a lot going on in September, and that's all to get ahead of the levy limit vote that will be on September 21st. That is due to the state by the end of August or end of September. And then we're also planning a community meeting at Como Pavilion in September, and hopefully the weather will be nicer than it was on October 13th.
Yeah, and to the newspapers, please, let's get a different picture. That is so ugly. Every single one of us looks ugly. And windblown. It's like we found the worst conditions ever. We all look like Trump with a comb over.
That's unofficial. Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
It's not, we didn't notice that on our agenda, so I should have said
that. And then this year I have some planned follow-up. So if departments have to come back and we have questions for them, it's just going to be scheduled so that we can just schedule it on their calendars. And we also know that the October 5th and August – gosh, I am all over on my dates. October 5th and November 2nd will be follow-up discussion.
Ms. Anker.
Thanks, Council President. Holly, thanks as always for your thoughtfulness in putting this together. Is there a version of this that includes those deadlines for the levy limit vote and other things that we can use to promote?
Yes. I can get you a copy, and I will double check, but I believe our website's also updated with this information.
Okay.
So
thank you.
I meant to double check that yesterday, but I'm pretty sure it's up and running. The plan right now is to adopt a budget on December 7th. It must be voted on and adopted by the 14th. This year we've asked departments that are all departments in the city to provide a presentation for City Council. Also include a supplement document just to review FTE history and talk about the vacancies that they have in their department and what's the status of filling those. And if they're a department that has fees, what is their fees? How have those fees changed? And are we recapturing our costs?
I heard a preview that we can expect a change in vacant buildings, significant. That's about time. Mr. Tolbert, did you?
And I know you will, but if we can just remind them again to put in Legistar by Friday so the public has a chance to review the presentations as well as council members prior to the meetings. I think that's helpful.
I like that framing, too, the public. It's not just us that's asking. We want, for transparency's sake, we need it in there by Friday. Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. I was just noticing, Ms. Houston, that the questions that I think we've asked our departments to present on really mirror those best practices of budget guidelines that you laid out earlier about fee recovery of costs and efficiency and making sure staffing is right. So I think it's great that you, I don't know if we discussed those guidelines before you created the questions, but that you embedded those best practices into the questions we're asking of departments. And I also just want to call out that you always come up with really great department-specific questions for each that sometimes in the past you've sent to us before the presentation. But I know this year you're also asking each department to answer those specific questions beforehand. And I just want to make sure you'll be sharing those questions with us as well in advance of each presentation, right?
Council Member Naker, I can make a point to do so. In the past, I have given my specific questions to the departments as things they should include, but I can be more directive.
I think it'd be great just for us to know what you've asked them specifically to present on so that we can
absolutely.
Ask that. That's all I'm
saying. Yes. I will make sure that's included.
You do?
I think I do. And this year I've tried to make some of the background a little more robust, and we'll continue to improve so that you have everything you need. As I mentioned, the community event is September 20th at 5:30. It's a Tuesday. So looking forward to hear from the public on what the mayor has proposed in his budget to help the council members shape it up for final adoption.
And the goal here is just we have a state obligation to do a truth and taxation hearing in December. And by the time we have that public hearing, it's way too late to make any sort of changes or influence the budget. And people expressed frustration that they came to testify and we'd already decided what we were going to do. And we're like, you're right, because we've been working on this since March. You know, so we have switched to have our own input session in September to get input early so that if changes are possible, that they're at the beginning part instead of the end part. And I think as a result, we've had less participation and less frustration by the public in the December hearing, which is when kind of it's water under the bridge, and more participation in September, although usually it's whatever the hot happening is. Last year, I think it was vaccination was a conversation, and the year before it was maybe elections. I don't remember. But it does tend to be topical as opposed to the budget, but we do provide that opportunity. And a few folks take us up on it, and it helps frame our final votes.
Then key dates. So we'll hear the proposed budget a week from Thursday. The council budget meetings kick off the 24th. The community event is the 20th of September. Levy limit vote on the 21st. Estimated property taxes are mailed mid-November, and so that takes the levy limits that each jurisdiction passed in September and creates an estimate for homeowners any property owner so that they can have an estimate of what their property taxes will be next year. And then we'll have the truth and taxation hearing after those are mailed, and then budget adoption the first week in December. I'm at famous question slide. So,
questions. Thank you for the preview and the reminder of some of our topics. The one of them that this is prompting all sorts of follow-ups, and I think this one is a Bryn follow-up. The Charter Commission was going to announce its. I think they have new membership, or there was a bunch of terms that were expiring. I think it's important to know if they've seated the new Charter Commission members. We, you know, continue to have some charter issues that we've been sort of waiting to advance until they have actually have a board seated. And I believe that was supposed to be completed by July, and we haven't heard back. So that would be good to know. I just peeked at my, like, list of things I wanted to accomplish this year, and one of them requires that there's a Charter Commission seated. So let's do it. Okay, thanks on that. Any other questions? I mean,
requests.
You have a thousand right now. It comes at you like a fire hose, I know. It's like I have so many questions, I don't even know where to start. So, but we will make sure that everyone's brought along in the budget process. This is great that you got pushed in the deep end with us this morning. And okay, any other things? All right, if there's nothing else to come before us this morning at Org Committee, we are adjourned.